Welcome back to Remodeling Reinvented. I'm Caitlin Copley, joined as always by my amazing producer, Diana Volker. Today, we're exploring the creative foundations of architecture with two incredible residential designers, Arnold Garza and Allison Smith from Jackson Design and Remodeling. Arnold brings decades of architectural experience, and Allison combines creative artistry with technical skills. Together, they help clients turn ideas into inspired, buildable homes. We'll talk about how they balance art and function, where they find inspiration, and get into permitting and planning. We hope you enjoy the episode. All right, you guys, thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Excited to be here.
So to get things started, I kind of wanted to go back a little bit, maybe dive a little bit into your history and how you got into architecture. So Arnold, how did you get started in architecture and what inspires you to do this?
I kind of got started in an unconventional way. My dad was a builder, similar to Todd Jackson. We did design build in the 80s and 90s. And then, you know, when he retired, I went to work for a couple of different engineers, a couple guys that came from the city, actually. I always liked to draw, right? Mm-hmm. And my dad had a construction company, and I would come from a large family. Everyone in my family kind of picked up a trade along the way. I got electricians, plumbers, concrete guys, framers, stucco, all that stuff.
Skill trade.
And I was the youngest. At that point, my dad had everything pretty well established, but he needed someone to draw plans. And I was young. He actually hired a guy to teach me. I used to draw plans by hand and kind of learned that way. And I went to school later, but I was already had a good start.
It was in your blood.
School. Yeah, kind of. I would say so.
Yeah. Allison, what about you? What inspired you to get into this kind of career?
Yeah, so I don't have the same kind of familial connection as Arnold. The only architect in my family is my Uncle Peter. But growing up, I always was drawn to being creative and interested in art and design, whether that was through pottery or graphic design or calligraphy. And when I went to school for my undergrad, I actually was pursuing a business degree initially, but it was missing that kind of like creative side. So I wanted to find a career that had the creativity and also some business intertwined within it. So spent some time really thinking and dreaming about what I wanted my career to look like. And that's when I started spending some time with my Uncle Peter. And when I saw that, you know, his plans really came to life into these absolutely incredible homes, I kind of felt that inspiration and excitement that this is what my career could look like as well.
Oh, that's awesome. What do you love most about working with clients? I'm sure there's lots of different personalities. And what do you love most about that?
I've always kind of considered myself a problem solver. When we're working with clients, kind of extracting what they want to do, getting a program from them on how they want to do their home, and then kind of putting it to paper so that we can actually build off it. That is a form of problem solving. I mean, they don't tell us exactly what they want. They kind of give us their scenarios and then we kind of create from there. So I think some of the things I like about it the most are the relationships you build with clients over the course of a project or multiple projects. You become friendly with them. And it's the end of the day when the project is complete and they're satisfied with the results. It really is very rewarding.
And it seems essential to form a connection with them because you really have to dig deep to find those emotions and what they're looking for and why do you want this and really ask those questions, right?
We definitely try to pick our clients' brain and figure out their likes and dislikes or if they have any specific routines or what makes their home feel like theirs. We'll take those ideas and emotions and translate it into tangible designs where the client can really visualize how the project's going to transform their life and then take that through construction.
For sure. And I'm sure you draw inspiration from all over the place, like San Diego's culture, nature. Like, what are some places where you draw inspiration?
San Diego is such a great town as far as architecture goes. And it's well divided into pockets. You got Terracan over there and then it's in hills and then you go into the valleys, you got Mission Valley. It's very divided by landscapes. for instance, La Jolla. La Jolla has so much good architecture, and it's all vastly different. It's they don't have a like HOA that governs all of La Jolla right. that's saying, hey, all these homes have to be mission style or whatever. They're pretty eclectic, and you get a lot of great architecture there. The same in Rancho Santa Fe. You have a lot of big homes out there where you can draw inspiration. Even like Mission Hills, if you like that sort of mission style architecture,
yeah,
it's a great place to kind of just go and just enjoy the homes there.
It's so true. I feel like if you take a drive through San Diego or different pockets of San Diego, you're going to see something totally different. Around the corner, there could be something super contemporary.
Like, it's so surprising.
Yeah, like Point Loma too, right?
Point Loma's a great place as well, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Coronado's a great example of that as well. Mm-hmm. They're the rules that regulate the homes there. They want the homes to be very unique.
So yeah.
Definitely, there's not going to be a cookie cutter houses down the street. And you can feel that in their neighborhood.
And even when you travel, like recently I was in the Canadian Rockies and there is a little bit of a German influence there, and even their architecture inspired the towns right. and stuff. So it seems like where the people come from, it all kind of has an inspiration. So
yeah, for sure.
Really,
that's California, the mission style that kind of came from, you know, through Mexico on up.
Yeah.
California.
That's pretty cool.
Style.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's get into the meat here. So I know you guys use various tools to accomplish your projects. So Allison, I know you go out to people's homes and do 3D scans. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and how it helps you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm part of the team that goes out and measures home. It's myself and Annie. And we use a brand new technology that uses LIDAR, which is light detection and ranging. And it basically is a 3D scanner that shoots out light lasers to measure distances and generate a 3D mesh of those points. Oh. It's called a point cloud.
Okay.
Of whatever environment it's scanning. It's super accurate and it's much better than kind of previous systems that we had when, you know, we used to measure things by hand, mm-hmm. just have a tape measure and a little handheld laser and write everything down on paper. But now we can use this laser scanning technology and then import that point cloud into our BIM software.
Uh-huh.
BIM is building information modeling software. So we're able to have kind of a collaborative model.
Yeah.
With super accurate dimensions and the ability to work in between departments on this shared 3D model.
I would think it would give you way more information than doing it by hand, right?
Absolutely. One of the great things about it is when we measure by hand, there was always, I forgot this one dimension or you missed it. And now we can go back and just kind of do our 3D walkthrough of the home. And for instance, if I need to know exactly where a can light is in the ceiling or an electrical outlet, I can open up the file and put it right exactly where it is. And it's awesome.
Wow.
It really is a game changer for us.
Wow. That's amazing how technology evolves yeah. and then
never go back. It's amazing.
It's also helpful for sizing on certain things. So a client might say, I want the light fixture over my dining room table to be a similar size as my old one, but I'm not sure how big my old one was. Could you go measure it? And we can reference that. So it's
helpful for all different areas. It takes that kind of measurement too. Wow. So it's a truly three-dimensional scan
yes,
in every aspect. Wow. So once you get the scan, you put these drawings together. Are they like what's existing, basically?
Pretty much. We draw out the existing first. We call it an as-built, and we basically take the scans and we plop them into Revit, for lack of a better term, and we're able to trace those walls.
Okay.
And it's so accurate to within like a half inch or quarter inch. It really is a beneficial tool.
Awesome. And Allison, do you and Annie ever discover anything unusual or quirky while you're doing these scans or investigating?
I would say that construction, often there's something quirky behind the drywall. So the scans, you can't see what's behind the drywall, but the cool thing about this technology is because it's so accurate, you know, we're able to see if a wall is skewed in a certain way, or maybe the floor is not level, or how the structure is coming together. It's much easier to kind of infer what's going on behind that drywall. And then we're able to do a little bit of a deeper dive on areas that we might assume something else is going on.
Oh, I never really thought about that, because not everything was built probably correctly initially, or maybe they just didn't have the technology to be able to do that.
And over time you get settlement and things
change a little bit. Things move. So you can take all that into account and then fix or address those issues for the remodel. So how does this information sort of set the stage for your designs that make them both creative and buildable?
It's really not possible to do what we do in the remodeling space without having accurate as-builts. You know, new construction, you can kind of start from the ground up. But in terms of remodeling, it's super important for us to have that kind of baseline and lay all the cards out on the table in the very beginning so that we can kind of understand and plan properly for building and structural systems, interior design layouts, and various aspects of the scope of work.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal really is to limit change orders and other surprises down the road for clients. And even though it's not perfect, you know, there are some things that are unexpected that might come up during remodeling. It's a huge improvement, and we're continually trying to improve that system.
Yeah.
So unless you took off all the drywall and every wall and kind of took out the insulation and measured from that point, you're going to have a little bit of discrepancy, or you're not going to be able to see what's behind that wall, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an incredibly competitive business that we're in. So being accurate, having an accurate foundation, which is our model, essentially, and starting the process gets us that much closer to home and just make sure we're priced accurately. And we also have our teams that go in and we'll climb the attic. We'll see what's going on upstairs. If there's an underfloor, we'll crawl under and make sure we're addressing any structural concerns that might be.
And you've probably heard over the years, I think I've heard you mention this, where maybe they met with a couple other companies and then they're like, nobody else mentioned this but you. So yeah, it probably makes you feel good when you...
I mean, we've got a lot of experience on our team. The more houses you've demoed, the more you see. So it's like a guy who's done his fourth house or a guy who's done his 100th house, there's so many more problems that guy who's done 100 has seen that you can anticipate things behind the drywall where other guys may or may not.
Or even if you did a past project in that neighborhood, you
also
go, this tends to have this slope or this, I've seen this issue before, so you can anticipate that better.
Yeah,
that's cool.
I've done like 25 homes in a particular neighborhood at Scripps Ranch, and you're right, I know those homes like a...
Yeah.
It's also cool to kind of talk in within our department. I know if we have a new project, Arnold or one of the other designers might say, oh, this architect did it 40 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever, just so we have a little bit more backstory on the house.
So collaboration. Yeah, your department's very tight, which is great because you always have a reference to go see somebody for help and ask questions, right?
I think that open floor plan that we have and we can hear any conversation that's going on is really helpful. Yeah.
Probably sometimes.
Yeah.
It's all good.
So when you're working with these clients, everyone has a different kind of lifestyle. How do you approach designing for entertaining or multi-generational living or even clients who work from home? How do you kind of approach each project?
Well, I'll start with the multifamily situation.
Yeah.
I think, as you know, California is a pretty expensive place to live,
right?
Southern California especially. And there are many reasons why you might have multi-generational people living in one particular home. Could be mom and dad or getting a little bit older and they need a place to be. And versus going to a home, you're going to bring them to your house. And or adult children. I mean, they're just getting started in the world and it's very expensive out there. Sometimes it's a good place to bring them in and kind of just let them kind of get their bearings.
Yeah.
You know, what we try and do is, and when this happens, we definitely try and create private spaces. It's also welcoming to family, but also keep it private because you don't want to be on top of each other all the time. I mean, it's good to be with family.
Definitely not.
Definitely want your own privacy. Dad's watching TV, but he watches it really loud. So it's nice to have that separation, right?
Yeah. A little independence there.
Yeah, for sure. Like the kids studying or in the other room or maybe I don't want to watch what they're watching.
Right.
And so, you know, you could do, oftentimes it's, hey, look, we just want to add a couple rooms and that's where mom and dad are going to be. Or it's like, hey, we want to do this ADU in the back of the home or on the side of the home, whatever it is. And they're going to have their own separate space, but we want to be very close by. So there's many options.
Yeah, we see a lot of ADUs. Right. That's a big one.
And I think a lot of it comes down to asking pretty detailed questions to our clients. So in terms of like families who love to entertain, we really try to get deep into what entertainment looks like for them, because entertaining to one client might be having four people over for a small dinner party, and to another client, it's hosting
30 people.
Yeah, 30 people, and they need enough space and enough kitchen space to host everyone. So it really depends on the client.
That's so true. Everyone's definition is different. And I think not just making assumptions based on your own personal biases, like, well, this is how I entertain, so this must be how they entertain.
And you had also touched on home offices.
Oh, yes.
15 years ago, home offices weren't really a big thing. You basically would have a desk somewhere to set up to pay bills or something very small.
Yeah.
And since the pandemic, home offices have become a much larger part of life now. And people are actually remodeling their homes to add this space. And we try and, you know, give them a private space away from public areas so they can actually focus on work, maybe provide some storage space in there and maybe a powder bath. Or even if it's closer to the main space, we definitely try and provide a way to close it off so you could definitely get some work done.
Yeah.
Without kids getting on you or whoever. Yeah.
Well, and I've also heard that specialty kind of rooms where people may invest a little more in their bathroom because it's like, this is where I get to be alone and have this be my sanctuary.
For sure. I mean, primary bathrooms are huge in our business, and they've kind of grown so much over time. I mean, you look at a lot of the homes that were built in the 80s, and even the primary baths were 5 by 10, 12, something like that. Mm-hmm. And now they're just these retreats, and it's super cool.
They have fireplaces now, heated floors.
Gosh,
luxury.
Sounds pretty good. So kind of getting into permitting, I know that can get complicated for a lot of people, whether or not you're working with a company like Jackson Design Remodeling or trying to do it yourself. When you're working with a client through the design process, can you walk us through what happens from when you draw it to when the city reviews it until final approval?
It's quite a process, right? We'll start with an architect client interview, kind of establishing what their particular needs are. And from there, we'll gather quite a bit of information from the client, as well as from the municipality, which will tell us zoning, setback, planning information that'll tell us what we can do on that property. So we have to kind of gather all that stuff first. Then we'll start laying out our designs, and we'll usually come up with 2 or 3 floor plans to start the process.
Mm-hmm.
Go back and meet with the client. Hey, this is where we're at based on our previous conversations. Review it. So we'll do that. And then from there, we'll go back into the office and we'll kind of start our design development phase, which is basically making 3D drawings going up so you can view the house from elevations or 3D perspectives. And then we'll have another meeting with the client to kind of say, hey, this is where we're at. Is this what you had in mind? And usually at that point, we got a pretty good idea of what they're trying to achieve. So we're pretty spot on at that point. If not, there's a little bit of tweaks. And then from that point on, we will start doing the construction documents and get ready for the city. There's floor plans, foundations, roof frame, all the pertinent building sections, site plan. We'll get all that stuff taken care of.
And then once the city gets it, do they prove it? Do they send things back? Like, you need to make this revision.
Right.
Does it make a difference in different areas of San Diego?
It does. We kind of do most of our work in the city of San Diego. So we've kind of got their timeline down very well. During the pandemic, they were a little bit slow, but they've kind of got back up to speed and they're pretty much at normal pace now. County of San Diego is different. They'll probably take, for instance, if a particular job took 3 to 4 months in the city of San Diego, it might take 6 or 7 months in the county. It's just, they're checking more stuff. They have different things that they're checking in the county. Then you go to a city like Carlsbad and they're relatively quick.
Yeah.
You're going to get your permit probably in about 2 months there. So depending on the size of the project, right?
It just
Every
varies.
Jurisdiction varies. So it's good we have people that are familiar with all of them. So
I was going to say, you probably have to keep up to date on all of the laws and regulations.
We do. The codes are pretty consistent, right? It's this ADU stuff. That's something that varies from place to place and how they're looking at them, because they're allowed to have their own interpretation of how they do things. You know, when we start a project, when someone wants an ADU, we really have to do our homework.
Yeah.
So we're going to give them what they can get, and as well as not having to try and move backwards.
And didn't they actually, was it in the state of California, didn't they make it easier to build an ADU 5 years ago or six years ago?
I mean, ADUs weren't even a thing. They called them granny flats.
In-law
suites. And then they created this program where California said, you know what, we need more. We have a housing crisis. We need more homes in California. They came up with this ADU program, and it's evolved just immensely. I mean, as it started, pretty much any property, you could add an ADU and a junior ADU, which is a smaller version, but attached to the home. And then as it's grown, I mean, there's people who are doing 100 ADUs on lots.
Wow.
It's actually become quite a problem.
Oh, no.
There's a lot of litigations that's still not resolved yet, but it's interesting. Like, I try and keep up with it, and it's like, man, I get where these neighbors are coming from. Like,
yeah.
I'm on a cul-de-sac, and I've got limited parking already, and then somebody builds 3 ADUs, and another guy builds 2 ADUs. It's like, where are all these people going to park?
Because they're renting them out.
It's funny. They say if you're near a transit area, you don't have to provide parking. But everyone drives a car in San Diego.
Right.
It's hard not to. Yeah.
That's what it is, and we roll with it.
Yeah. Being flexible.
Right.
That seems like it would be good in your industry. So as far as the permitting process, how do you explain this or communicate it to homeowners so it makes sense to them? Or throughout the process, do you give them updates? Hey, this is where we're at? Or
I think that's the most important thing. So we're going to start off by telling them what that particular jurisdiction is like and what we've seen on our past few jobs that we've gone through there. And then we're going to update them throughout the process, because that way they know they're not sitting at home, where's my permit?
You know? Yeah.
It's kind of important to update them every couple of weeks. So that way they know, and there's no...
I didn't forget about
you. No dark thoughts building up.
Yeah. So much information too. It sometimes can be overwhelming to just right off the bat kind of dump all this information on clients.
Yeah.
So definitely, you know, happy to answer any questions that they might have, and we'll do our best to share the pertinent information to their project.
Yeah. I bet it's exciting when the permit gets approved.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can get started finally. So getting into some homeowner tips, what are 2 or 3 things homeowners should know before starting a remodel?
We have a lot of TV shows out there, like HGTV.
And
there's Design on Dime, but it used to be an old show. There's a lot of people building projects, maybe in Texas or other places. And the costs are not necessarily the same in Texas as they are in California.
Yeah.
And a lot of those shows, they have a lot of sponsored stuff that's coming their way, like toilets, sinks, whatever. They're getting stuff for not like what we're paying.
Yeah.
So one thing I would be cautious of is kind of plan accordingly and know what the costs are going to be down here. So we definitely try and make sure we're giving clients exactly what they can get.
Yeah.
Another thing I would say for clients is kind of making sure you're on schedule with your selections, right? Nothing worse than, oh, we didn't order this door in time, and now the project's sitting for an extra 4 weeks, 5 weeks with not a lot going on because something wasn't ordered in time. So
we stay
on top of that in our company. We're making sure we get that stuff ordered.
And kind of when they need to make a decision, reminding them.
Keep them on track.
Yeah, tracked. Yeah.
I would say something to consider before you start the remodel is if you'll be moving out of the home during construction.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of clients, when we're doing larger home remodels, you really just can't stay in the home. Versus, you know, if you want to plan, you know, a big trip around when you're going to be redoing your kitchen, or maybe stay with family while we're doing construction, it can definitely be a little bit easier on the clients. I think sometimes emotionally, like when you're living in a construction zone, it's a little bit much. So planning for where you'll be
living. I think that's a great tip. I've heard that from multiple people we've interviewed, and taking that into account. So if you are going to need to rent something, you need to put that in your budget too, that I'm going to be renting. So just knowing what you're going to do and not just figuring it out after the fact.
Yeah. And oftentimes we can plan the project where there is an area that you can live. I mean, it's not the best living that you're used to, but when
it's
you
temporary.
Start thinking about, $3,000-$4,000 a month paying rent outside, it can go a long way to some of your finishes on your project. So
people have to weigh that.
Right.
Like, where will I stay? Do I want to stay with a family member for that long?
Right.
Or would I rather live in the construction site?
I don't know.
I don't know. We'll see.
Who has an ADU?
Yeah, I know. I know. So what would you say is a tangible tip or advice for homeowners working with a design team like JDR? Do you have any advice for them?
Yeah. My number one piece of advice for anyone considering remodeling is organize and understand your priorities. It's really important to spend time thinking about the core reason of why you want to do this remodel and think less about like certain elements you might want to add later that might kind of fluff up the job, but really why you want to invest this money, why you want to spend time through construction, and be clear with your team on that as well. It really helps us understand where to invest our time and effort into the project to make sure it's everything that you're dreaming of. I think as designers, we are always pushing for what's going to be the most beautiful and what's going to make the clients the most happy. And we have this vision that, you know, we kind of fight for along the way, but also part of the business is respecting the client's budget. So there are certain things that we try to do within the architecture department. A big one is value engineering. So coming up with creative solutions to maybe complicated structural problems that really do impact the cost a lot for the overall budget. And another thing that we keep in mind is the finish material on exterior of home. So it comes at a price for sure, but I think when you place material strategically on the exterior of the home, whether that's stone or siding, some of those like high ticket items, we definitely want to present options to clients so that it's in their control of where they want to invest their money. So if they don't really have a strong opinion, I guess, on the front of the house, they might not want to invest, or vice versa. They really care about the curb appeal and they want that entrance to be really grand, and, you know, just comes down to the price and where they want to invest.
Yeah. Defining like what is most important to me.
Right.
What am I willing to pay for and invest in?
Yeah. I think that's probably the best part of design build, right? You've got an interior designer, you've got an architect, you've got a builder all working together to make sure we're going to give you the best product that we can, because everyone's fighting to give the best, right?
Yeah.
And then you've got the responsibility of the contractor on board saying, that's great, guys, but we just went over budget by X amount and we need to start clipping back. How are we going to do this before we present this to the client?
Exactly.
We'll always give them an option. Hey, you could do this, or even sometimes we'll plan in phases. Well, you know what? We could do this home, and then 2 years down the road, you could add this stone on.
Yeah.
That's what it'll look like eventually. And money is what it is, and people know what they have to spend, so we have to be respectful of that.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And I'm sure it makes for a happier client that Absolutely. You respect their budgetary wishes. And can you share with us maybe a client's dream that seemed challenging at first, but then you guys were able to problem solve and teamwork? I know you mentioned value engineer. Do you have an example?
We call that a Tuesday around here. No, I think all jobs have their particular challenges. Sometimes it's budget. Sometimes it's trying to fit the whole program in a limited space because, say, they're on a small lot, whatever it is. A particular example, I maybe a year ago, the project got completed at ADU in Scripps Ranch. The client didn't have a lot of room in the backyard and they have kids. They didn't want to waste that space. And it was in a homeowners association in Scripps Ranch. They're like, okay, let's build it in the front. And I told them, well, you can. Yeah, I don't know what your HOA is going to say. But we went through the process. We got it all designed. And I had done other projects in that area. So I felt pretty good about it. When we submitted to the HOA, they were not happy. An ADU in the front of the home. They didn't like it. We went probably 5 rounds with the HOA to get this thing designed and tweaked a little bit here and there to get it how they needed it to be so that they would allow it.
Yeah.
And even at the end, they were not going to allow it. But one of the guys, there was a swing vote, and it was one
guy.
He said, well, you told this guy if he went and did these changes, you would approve it.
Oh.
And now you're still not going to approve it. So I'm going to change my vote. Ooh. And he's the guy who ended up being the swing vote for us.
Wow.
Yeah. And HOA is notorious for not.
So you have to be an advocate for your clients to get things built.
Absolutely. With HOAs and ADUs, it's a little bit of a battle right now. The state is kind of mandating that you allow these ADUs to happen. But you're getting some pushback from some HOAs.
Yeah.
if it all goes down to it, I believe if the state's going to mandate, you have to have allow these people to do this thing.
Right.
It's just they're,
of course,
if they're going to fight you until you, you know, force them to.
And I guess there's limits to it. So it's like, if it's a reasonable request, can we get this thing built? But right. if it's someone, I want to build five in my front yard.
Like, yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know.
And maybe that's what they're afraid of. I get it. I mean, nobody wants a bunch of cars parked on your street when you have all these nice homes. I totally understand.
100%.
Yeah. Remodeling itself is not an easy thing. There are a lot of selections, decisions that you have to make as a client of materials you're going to pick. And we do this every day. They're doing this maybe three times in their life. So being sure of what that material is going to look like when it's all put together can be questionable, right?
Yeah.
So we have a very good team, a lot of talented designers on our team. I would say if I was talking to a client, rely on that team. If you're not sure about something, bounce ideas off people. We're there for that. We'll help you all through this process. We'll make sure the materials are ordered accurately and on time.
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing I would say is you have a good team, you rely on them for
support. Take advantage of it. Absolutely. Ask the questions as you do have a team. So do you guys have anything else you want to share before we get into some quick fire questions with Diana?
Oh, bring it on.
All right. Diana, you ready for the quick fire round?
Ready, Arnold.
You got it.
Hey, Arnold, first. What is your favorite architectural style to design in?
That's a good question. As an architecture designer, you have to love and be able to design to any style, especially in remodeling, right? Because you could get a mission style home, you get a craftsman style home, you get a mid-century home. You have to be able to adapt to those styles. And if you don't have a respect for them, if you don't like those styles, it's going to make it a lot harder.
Right.
So I like all styles. I think if I had to choose one, I might choose mid-century modern because I feel like on a budget, you can get a lot done.
Uh-huh. Totally.
And it's going to look awesome. And it's timeless, right? Mid-century modern is what it is. It's not like you're going to have to remodel it again in 10 years. It'll stand the test of time.
Right.
100%.
For sure. Design your dream house in 30 seconds or less.
30 seconds or less. You know, for me, less is more, right? I've designed bigger homes and I've lived in bigger homes, and it's just too much to take care of. I would keep my home probably from 2,200 to 2,500 square feet. I'd probably go mid-century modern or contemporary because that's hot for me right now.
Right.
Lots of glass, lots of natural light, and better details versus more space.
I
would spend the money on details versus extra space. I think that's where I'm at in life. Yeah.
What are details?
I mean, like window treatments, some of the gingerbread on the front of the house, just making sure the
gingerbread
staying true to the style of the home, right?
I love that.
Yeah. Can you tell me what gingerbread is?
Right.
I would say, like, when you have like a craftsman style home, you have like maybe trim work in the front of the home.
Uh-huh.
They'll call that stuff gingerbread.
Oh, that's
God, I'm
like thinking
it.
Cookie cutter stuff.
When you think of a gingerbread home,
right?
Like
the little icing. What would you say? What's the most surprising lesson you've learned in your career?
this is a good question. The most surprising thing I've learned is that all projects turn out better when designed in collaboration with a team and a client, right? I think when I was younger, I was like, oh, people they don't see the vision and they're blocking it. And really, at the end of the day, going through the process and having all that back and forth really creates special, unique projects for the client. And it's just a much better deal at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah.
Collaboration. Allison, it's your turn.
I'm ready.
What is favorite part of blending creativity and technology in your work?
I would say the product that you're able to produce is really just exponentially better.
Mm-hmm.
Once you kind of learned new technologies and you're able to understand them and work efficiently with them, it saves a lot of time, it reduces error, and whether you're just working on drawings in Revit or producing renderings, it really just improves the work.
Nice. All right. Design your dream home in 30 seconds or less.
I would definitely want an older home that has a lot of character that I can renovate and kind of make it my own. But I would say definitely surrounded by nature, a lot of windows everywhere, maybe a little stained glass here and there.
Ooh.
Rich hardwood floors and really beautiful interior finishes. A music room with really good speakers, a home gym, a workshop, and just making it really
Wow.
Personal to me.
We're all going to hang out at your house.
I know.
For her, there. More is more.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's so more. Interesting because the both of you are so different.
Well, yeah.
I mean, your home is, it's favorite. A true expression. That's the one thing besides maybe, you know, fashion or how mm-hmm. you express yourself. And we spend so much time in our homes. It really should be your safe haven and a place right. that reflects you.
True. What's one underrated design detail that makes a big impact?
I would say ceiling height. I think that really impacts massing in a space. Uh-huh. And, you know, there are some projects that I think we don't need super high ceilings. Like kind of bringing down the mass a little bit and making it feel more intimate is almost better in some mm-hmm. cases. So I think you see that a lot in older architecture. You can see how they change the massing depending on yeah. which room you're in. So.
Interesting.
That is so true. Because I've been in homes where the ceiling is so high and I'm just like, what's going on up there?
Everyone nothing. Wants to raise the roof.
Space. Yeah, raising the roof.
Caitlin. Well, Arnold and Allison, it was an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. Well, and
you two are so wonderful.
Fun to be here.
And I loved hearing about your background and insights into what you do on a daily basis mm-hmm. and keep working as a team, and I'm sure you'll achieve great things
Thanks
in the
future.
Thanks
for sharing all that with us.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. You're welcome.
And that's a wrap on today's episode. If you're dreaming of a remodel or love design inspiration, be sure to subscribe to Remodeling Reinvented on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.